GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. I'm your host for this edition of GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler, your executive producer, cutting up tape, working the phones.
And each week we seek interesting guests that have a compelling story about how their idea is making the world more sustainable. And this week we'll meet...
This week we're going to talk to Tom Appel. He's been test driving the all-new Chevy Bolt with a B as in boy. That's their new all-electric vehicle. Ireland is leading the way when it comes to divestment from fossil fuels. Also, an interesting and green way to store energy by using ice.
All that's coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. The publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, Tom Appel, joins us now to kick off GreenSense with our green automotive news.
Hey, thanks.
So what's the Prince of Pistons been up to?
I have excitedly been poring over our first spin of the 2017 Chevrolet Bolt. Our man on the road, Rick Cotta, has finally spent some extended time with the Bolt. And comes back, Rick is not a man given to hyperbole, but he is very excited about the prospects for this vehicle.
Well, it's about time, Tom. They've talked about this forever, so I'm glad to see that it's hitting the streets.
Yeah, we have been talking about this vehicle forever, and this is, the electric car market has been stagnant for a little bit. There was 160,000 cars sold last year, less than 1% of the total U.S. market, but I think the Bolt might be the game changer here.
And Tom, how much of those decreased sales was due to low oil and gas prices?
Oh, I don't know for sure, but I would wager that a lot. A substantial amount of those have to be. There was just no financial incentive to move electric.
So is this car fun enough to drive that it's going to get people over the price hurdle and the cheapness of gas to get in the door?
Yes, that's the news here. Despite, let's not even talk about the fact that it's electric for a moment and just talk about the fact that, yes, in fact, it's described as nearly fun to drive, almost sporty. it does 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds for a vehicle that tied a 60 kilowatt hour battery somewhere in its wheelbase. It doesn't feel heavy. And it doesn't feel like it's weighed down by that, according to Rick again. It seats four people comfortably. It's got very short overhangs front and back, so it's easy to park. Yeah, apparently the steering is light and natural feeling. And these are all things you don't usually find in hybrid or electric vehicles.
And how far can you go on a charge?
Again, Chevy claims 238 miles. Rick was testing this out in the very ideal landscape for electric vehicles out in California where the weather was perfect. But according to their testing and the gauges and then the odometer, it looked like this vehicle was more than capable of doing 238. It was closing more on 250.
That's fantastic. So in the cold, frigid Midwest, what would you see on a winter week? How far can you go?
In our testing, you can lose as much as a third.
Ooh.
You're still close to 200, which is fantastic. But you lose a lot in the Chicago area in the winter.
But that's still, that's farther than most people are ever going to travel in a day to work and or commute. So it's still a good day's drive there on a charge.
Yeah, it absolutely is. The vehicle is impressive. That we have the affordability for the first time ever in a vehicle like this. So there's a lot of good going on here. You talk about the charging thing, and this is one of the things, and this isn't a ding against the Bolt. It's a ding against any electric vehicle. Once you have traveled that distance, if you use up that 240 or 250 miles, you are stuck for a while, depending on how you charge that vehicle. So that's still a setback, but this allows so much more freedom than any affordable electric vehicle before it.
Do you get a charger with the car that you can install in your home, or is that an additional price?
It's an additional price. They're fairly affordable these days. You can work with the Chevy dealer, and they can roll one into your financing. But you're talking about $500 to $1,000 for the charger and another $500 to hook up. Once you have it, you have a charger forever, and that's a level 2 charger. A level 2 charger will charge the Bolt in about 10 hours, so that's top to bottom. But in an hour, you'll pick up about 20 miles.
And what about getting a level 3 charger? What's the cost upgrade to that?
Right now, level 3 chargers are not typically installed in houses because the electric support system just won't support that. Usually those are at shopping malls or places like that where they have better access to high electricity.
So now that the Bolt is out, and it's an exciting development, and Chevy's got the Volt, the Bolt, what's next, the Jolt?
What will probably be next will be a variation of the Bolt. If in fact this becomes successful, and it seems like it might, they sold 2,000 in the first month, and this is just in California and Oregon. It's going to roll nationally this summer. But if Bolt proves to be a success for General Motors, we'll probably see variations on it. We'll probably see an all-wheel drive version. We will probably see something more like a crossover or a wagon come out of it. But there's a lot they can do with this.
Do you ultimately see the price of electric vehicles getting closer to the mid-20s?
Maybe slowly. Bolt's pricing is aggressive, as we know. If you can make use of the federal tax credit, it comes in under $30,000, which is fantastic for the base model. The premium model the premier model is $6,000 more. General Motors is still probably losing money on this vehicle. So the batteries come down in price. Into the mid-20s is probably, I think we are a leapfrog in battery technology away from that. We're still waiting for one more development.
Well, I look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks. And it's always good to hear from the Prince of Pistons. So you have a great week, Tom, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
That's Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, joining us here on GreenSense. You can read the Consumer Guide Automotive write-up on the Chevy Bolt. We've provided a link in this week's show notes. Subscribe to the GreenSense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Visit GreenSenseFarms.com. Ireland now has the historic opportunity to become the first country in the world to fully divest its sovereign wealth fund from coal, oil, and gas securities. Here to tell us more is Owen Rice, the head of communications for Trokara, who joins us all the way from Ireland. This bill was passed due to efforts by your organization, key members of parliament, and many people across Ireland acting on fossil fuel divestment. Could you tell us a little bit about your organization, Trokara, and how you were able to build such a powerful coalition to divest so much investment?
Sure. Well, Trokara is an overseas development agency. We're a development and humanitarian agency. So we're based in Ireland, but we work in around 20 countries around the world. So primarily Africa, but also Central America, the Middle East, and some Asian countries as well. We're long established here in Ireland, and as well as delivering aid and supporting communities overseas, we also try to mobilize people here in Ireland on issues that we think play a big role in development and global justice.
Coal, oil, and gas are not the high-rising stocks that they once were. A lot of people are following suit to what you've set here. What impact did the fact that these stocks have lackluster performance have on your ability to build a coalition to divest of these holdings?
Yeah, it definitely makes it easier. I mean, what we come at this primarily from the moral argument. So our argument is that we know fossil fuel industries cause climate change. As an organization who works with the poorest communities in some of the poorest countries in the world, we see every day the impact that climate change is having on those communities. So we argue mostly on the moral side, but there is also a very good financial reason for trying to pull out of fossil fuels. The stocks are not doing well, as we all know. 80% of known reserves have to stay in the ground. So they are, in effect, stranded assets, even though the fossil fuel companies are nowhere fossil fuels are. The fact is that they can't access them. They have to keep them in the ground. So we commissioned some research late last year by an organization called Corporate Knights in Canada. And what they found was that actually if Ireland had taken out these investments from the fossil fuel industry and reinvested in green energy, the Irish state would actually be 100 million euro richer. So we can actually make a financial argument as well as a moral argument. Now, as I said, the moral argument is what we stress most. But as you know, politicians being politicians, the financial argument often wins out over moral arguments with them. So it's very useful for us to be able to point to those figures. And that, I think, has certainly helped in terms of getting politicians on side.
You're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Owen Rice, the head of communications from Trokerud. And we're talking about the historic Irish fossil fuel divestment bill that recently passed and his organization's involvement. Owen, what happens if the stock prices start to soar in these fossil fuel companies and values increase? What happens to the moral argument?
Well, I suppose the moral argument will always stick. And really what we're saying is that we know, I mean, if the Irish government, as every other government, including the American government, even if the new president doesn't want to admit it, but we all signed up to the Paris Agreement. And under the Paris Agreement, we have to move towards renewable energy. There's no two ways around it. So what we're saying is that instead of investing in a sector that we know is on the way out, and that we know that if we're to live up to our international commitments, we can't build our future around fossil fuels. So let's start moving them out now. Let's start reinvesting them into renewable energies. And let's start actually making sure that those stocks are going up and that those industries are booming and that they're delivering clean, renewable energy for us, and that we're not damaging the communities overseas that we work with. Because Ireland is obviously a very small country, and I suppose what some people would always say is that as a small country, you know, what difference does it make really? You know, it's not like we're an America or a China or an India, but actually on a per capita basis, we are one of the worst polluting countries in the world. On a per capita basis, Irish people pollute more than Chinese people. So it's very symbolic, I think, for us to be making this move. And as you said, this would be the first state to divest public money, and not just to divest, but also to ban future investments from the fossil fuel industry. So it's not just a case of actually withdrawing money. It's actually saying that we as a country and as a people will not invest in this industry anymore. So I think that would send out a hugely powerful statement across the world. And as you know, Ireland is known as a green country. We're famous for our green and foreign environment. So we're saying let's go with that, and let's try to encourage others to do that.
What about the people of Ireland? Where do they stand on climate change in this bill?
Well, I think the same as people in a lot of countries. I think this is an issue that people know about, they're concerned about, but it's probably at the back of their head somewhere, and it's not, you know, a day-to-day issue. But even yesterday, we had a flood warning for our second major city down the south of Ireland, which has flooded nearly every year over the last maybe 5 or 6 years, hundreds of millions of euro worth of damage. We're seeing around the country, there's a lot of debate at the moment about insurance premiums, because insurance premiums for particularly for cars, but also for houses, are rocketing. And that's really because the insurance industry has had to pay out so much money for flooding. So I think people are beginning to put two and two together, and they're beginning to see, okay, this isn't just an abstract problem, or it's not a problem for the future. This is actually something very real. So I think there's really been an awakening in Ireland over the last particularly 5 years, I think, and climate change has moved a lot more to the fore of political and civic discussion, and people are a lot more conscious of it, I think, in a way that they used to be.
You mentioned this was a symbolic move. Has anybody followed suit, and have you gotten any response from other countries?
Well, not so much from other countries, but what we're seeing is, I mean, the divestment movement, I suppose, globally is growing. It's the fastest growing divestment movement ever. And it's been primarily driven from campuses, which I think has been really interesting. I know in America and also in the UK and all over the world, students groups have really pushed that. And we've seen that here in Ireland as well. Maynooth University, Trinity College, which would be probably our most famous university, and others have all stated that they will fully divest their investments from fossil fuel industry. So we're hoping that when the government passes this legislation, it's in its final stages in the sort of the legislative process at the moment. But we're hoping when this does become law, that particularly other European Union countries, because obviously we're still part of the European Union, we're hoping that that will encourage the divestment movements in other countries to say, well, if they manage to get this in Ireland, then, you know, maybe there is a chance that we could do it as well. And we're hoping there will be definitely a dominoes effect in Europe. And we really need it because European countries are far, far behind where they need to be. A lot of European countries, I should say, not all of them, in fairness, but countries like Ireland are very much behind our international obligations, and we're not on course to hit our targets. So this is the sort of radical action I think we need.
That's Owen Rice, head of communications for the organization Trocara, joining us on Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. Remember, you can subscribe to the Green Sense radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Visit greensensefarms.com for more information. Batteries can take on all kinds of shapes and sizes, but you might not realize that ice can be used to store energy and can help reduce the carbon footprint of homes, businesses, and industries. The Ice Bear from Ice Energy is a battery that doesn't store electricity, but it freezes water into ice when electricity is cheaper and then uses it to cool off indoor space during the day. CEO Mike Hopkins joins us on GreenSense now to tell us more. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Robert.
Mike, I saw you on the CBS Sunday morning program and asked Bob Kessler, our producer, to get you on the show because I thought you've got a wonderful technology. And I can see that you're the kind of guy that can sell ice to Eskimos and they'd be very happy, right?
Well, thank you. I do my best, but I tell you that the product kind of sells itself. It's a very cool, simple, effective device.
So did I explain it right, or is there anything I left out in the introduction?
You explained it so well, I'd love you to come work for us.
All right. Well, this is such a simple idea. Why didn't anyone think about this before?
Well, it's a simple idea, the idea that you can store energy in the form of cooling by freezing water and turning it into ice. That's a simple idea, been around a long time, and it's actually being used for that purpose. Going back, you know, to the 1800s, people have stored cool in ice. What we've done, which is different and actually was very difficult to do, is we took that simple idea and we figured out how do you mass deploy that? How do you mass produce that so that it can be done efficiently, cost effectively, and widely deployed so that kind of everybody gets the benefit of it? And that's a challenge. That was a challenge that we figured out, and that's why we have 16 patents on making and melting ice.
So walk us through the mechanics and the implementation of this simple idea.
Well, there's two systems we have that are slightly different. So maybe, Robert, if I can talk about the first one, which was our original product for commercial and industrial facilities.
Sure.
And then there's our new product, which is the home product, which works similarly, but a little different. And so it's easiest to describe them both separately. If I start with the commercial and industrial one, you can think of our product as an ice battery for the common air conditioner. If you have a commercial and industrial facility that uses so-called package air conditioning units, those things that look like boxes on rooftops, it's the most common type of air conditioning for a commercial facility. Well, our system looks just like one of those. If you saw one of our systems on the roof or on the ground, you'd think it was a package air conditioning unit. However, the difference is it connects to those air conditioners, and instead of cooling air, it freezes the water that's in the tank. And it does that, as you described in the intro, usually during off-peak periods when electricity is abundant and typically very inexpensive. So you use electricity to make that tank of ice, and then you hold on to it until electricity is expensive, scarce, And when you want to stop using electricity but still cool your building, the Ice Bear turns off the air conditioner or the air conditioners that are connected to it and just melts its ice. And by melting the ice, which it feeds refrigerant that's ice cold to that air conditioner, you're cooling the building, but you're not using any electricity to make that cooling. That's the commercial system. If you
let me ask a quick question there.
Electricity
is fairly expensive, but natural gas is really cheap. Can this process work on natural gas?
It can. We've done a couple of those as test units. Natural gas is more rare, not in terms of its supply, but it's more rare in terms of its use for air conditioners. So most air conditioners work on electricity. So most of our installations are dealing with air conditioners using electricity. We can, though, technically do it, and we have done it with natural gas-fed air conditioners.
So give us an idea of the energy and money savings that you bring to the table when you use this for commercial and industrial applications.
Well, in the typical commercial industrial application, and I'll give the example of California, what's happening is you will use, in total, about 5% less electricity for air conditioning. And that's because even though it's an energy storage device, the Ice Bear, which every energy storage device loses some energy through the storage process. And in our case, we have an 85% round trip efficiency, but we gain efficiency by making ice when it's cooler overnight. So we end up being net 105% efficient. Meaning you're going to use less electricity for air conditioning, even though you added an electrical device, the Ice Bear, to your building. That's one, I'd say, minor savings, but it's a savings. The bigger saving is here in California, every commercial customer is on a time of use rate, which incentivizes you to be smart about electricity use by offering you inexpensive electricity off peak, expensive electricity on peak. And the Ice Bear lets you optimize that. So every customer that's got an Ice Bear is going to save between $1,000 and $2,000 a year per Ice Bear unit that they have.
If you've just joined us, I'm Robert Colangelo, and my guest is CEO Mike Hopkins with Ice Bear, and we're talking about the ability to generate energy from ice. You're listening to Green Sense. Mike, that doesn't sound like a big savings, is it? Is it enough to be compelling to change your HVAC system?
Well, you got to put it into context. I'd say, yes, it should be enough, but that's looking at it from an individual building perspective. We look at it, and actually our principal customers are electric utilities. We look at this as solving a big, huge problem. If you're an individual homeowner, or if you're a commercial industrial customer, you don't have a big, huge problem. But this country and everybody in it has a big, huge problem with electricity. And the problem is that unless we get a lot of energy storage onto our grid soon, we're not going to continue to enjoy the benefit of renewable energy. Plus, we're going to continue to live with the world's most inefficient delivery system, which is our electricity grid.
Yeah, it's quite antiquated.
It's antiquated, and it's fatal flaw. It's fundamental flaw. And we live with this in terms of high cost and inefficiency. Its fundamental flaw is it doesn't have energy storage. If you think about it, Robert, every single commodity in the world is delivered with the benefit of storage. The one exception is electricity that hasn't had a good way of storing it. And the consequences being our electricity grid, no matter where you live in this country, your electricity grid is about twice the size it should be because it doesn't have a way of storing it. So it has to be built to the peak, the largest single day of demand. So it's twice as big and it's unreliable because it's twice as big and it has these tremendous swings in load to deal with the fact that you can't store it. So this country and every person here, we need to get storage onto the grid. How do you do that? Well, you want to do it quick and you want to do it cost effectively. And ours is the cheapest by far, simplest by far, way of getting storage onto the grid by turning your air conditioner into a storage device. We're fixing a big, huge problem.
So we have a little bit of time left. You've been in business since 2003 and offered the Ice Bear since 2005. How have you seen demand change since you started manufacturing?
Well, it's gone from zero to tremendous demand. And I would say the main difference, like what changed, is renewable energy. The good of renewable energy, and actually it's just plain good, but the good of renewable energy is that it's getting us off of fossil fuels. The bad or the problem that we've had with renewable energy is as it's come on to the grid, people, specifically the utilities, have been struggling with the intermittency of renewables. The fact that sometimes it's sunny, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's windy, sometimes it's not. And that means that this renewable energy that we'd all love to have from a grid perspective has actually become quite unreliable, quite erratic, and it needs help. Specifically, it needs a way to store it so that you don't care that it's intermittent. You take it when it's good, and if you don't need it right then, you store it. So I would say in about 2010 or 2011 is when utilities went from being kind of not that excited about energy storage or thought, oh, we don't need it, we'll deal with this inefficient grid and just live with it, to no, we need energy storage. And from that point on, our business has really taken off.
That's Ice Energy CEO Mike Hopkins joining us on Green Sense. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. We've had the Prince of Pistons on the show for a while, and we've covered electric cars. We want to know, are any of our listeners out there considering buying an all-electric car? And if so, which car are you looking at? Send me an email to robert@greensenseshow.com so that we can hear your thoughts. We'll be back next week. Next week, Bob, what are we going to be talking about?
We'll be getting into the future of food. Rebecca Chesney from the Food Futures Lab will join us for a good green conversation.
Well, subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you could visit greensensefarms.com, and you could view the list of radio stations that air our show. Our goal is to be an honest broker of sustainable information so that you can make informed decisions. We hope our guest inspired you to action. So stay fresh. Keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at Green Sense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.